Started the Torah in Northwest London, Thursday, 29th of Tammuz, 28th of July, Rabbi Yitzchak Shochet Shlita. What is your lot in life? This week's Torah has been sponsored by families Wieselfeld and Wittenberg to celebrate the Bar Mitzvah of Dodi Wittenberg and Lizchus Shraga Fivish Ben Elisheva Hinder, Shiyaskel Refuah Shlemo Besor Shorach Le Yisrael. And by the family, Lina Nishmas Morris Martel, Bas, Ramey Rafol, Shola, Mrs. Magda Joseph, whose first Yahrzeit was on Tuesday.
I'm going to change it up a little bit. You have one idea one week when you're asked for a title, and then it's already the following week, and it's Erev Rosh Chodesh. Oh, so everything is your lot in life, and it'll still tie in with the broader title as such. The Parsha this week in Maaseh, as we well know, recounts all the Maaseis, all the journeys that Klal Yisrael took in the Midbar. And then it pauses at certain specific intervals, and it highlights some of the particular occurrences that may have transpired in certain places. So, for example, they came to a lima, and there were 12 velas, but there were 12 wells of water and 70 date trees, etc., etc. And then within all of that, it also mentions the fact that Aaron Kohen Gadol dies in Har Harhar, and then in the very next pasuk it says Vayishma Knani, that the king of Canaan heard, and he, as Rashi says, he came, as we learned already earlier, he came to wage war against Klal Yisrael. Begging the question, there were other battles that took place, there were other situations that happened in their travels in the Midbar. Why is it that over here, right after it mentions about the passing of Aaron, true, immediately afterwards, there was the Melech Canaan, the Canaani came and tried to wage war against Klal Yisrael, but why is the Torah looking to deliberately emphasize that? What's the juxtaposition of the two events? So, first of all, the Gemara in Sota tells us, of course, that we all know, we had special gifts on account of the three greats that were joined with us in the Midbar. We had the Be'er, that well of water on account of Miriam, and which disappeared with her passing. We had the Mun on account of Moshe, which ultimately came to an end with his passing. And we had, of course, the Anane HaKovay, the clouds on account of Aaron, which disappeared with his passing. And there's an underlying significance to each of these special matanos, if you will, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and their specific relationship with each one of these individuals. In other words, why dafka the Mun with Moshe, why dafka the Be'er with Miriam, etc. But specifically, why were the Anane HaKovay on account of Aaron? And the answer is because Aaron was somebody who personified, of course, Oyev Shalom v'Roidev Shalom. He loved peace, he pursues peace. Hillel joins us in the Mishnah, Hegbe Mitzalmido Shar Aaron, we're all supposed to look to pursue Shalom in our lives in that same sort of way. So, the Torah tells us, right, when Aaron dies in Parsha Skukas, V'yivkoi say, Kol Beis Yisrael, everybody felt the impact of Aaron's Patira. And as Rashi famously observes, it's because Aaron made it his mission to bring Shalom ben Ish L'Rehehu, between one man and his friend, or one man and his alleged and supposed enemy, ben Ish L'Ishtai, between husband and wife, and so on and so forth. Everybody was enriched from the experience. We had so much more achdus on account of Aaron. And with his passing, everybody felt the void. And therefore, of course, everybody cries. Haman famously observes that the biggest problem with us was that we were mefuzer mefarad beino amin. We were spread out. There was disunity. And when there is a lack of unity, that's when Haman himself, from Amalek, recognizes the reality of the fact that we are ripe for the picking, as it were. The first thing Esther says in counter-response to that, to Mordechai, is Le'knesis kol ha'yehudim, gather everybody together. Bring them all back together in recognition of the fact that they are all one entity. So here's the point. You see, the mon fell proportionate to your stature as an individual. If you were a tzaddik, the mon fell right on your doorstep. If you were not, you had to walk a little further out to go get your portion. The water itself also, Chazal tell us, that each shevet had to use a stick to draw a canal from the actual be'er to their individual shevet. In both instances, there's a certain element of disparity, as it were. But when it comes to the Anane HaKovay, they hovered overhead, protecting everybody collectively. There was no disparity, there was no differentiation, there was no divisiveness. Everybody, all 12 Shvatim, were united under the equal protection of the Anane HaKavod. And that, therefore, was Dafka in the Schus of Aaron, who always sought out that unique quality amongst the people as well. So Rashi explains, when Aaron passes away, the Anane HaKavod, the clouds are removed. The protection is seemingly no more, thus enabling the king of Canaan to now think, now is a good time to try and launch an attack. But I would suggest to you that the point is more than that. If Aaron was the advocate for this compelling achdus amongst Klal Yisrael, he's the ultimate peacemaker, such that, again, everybody felt the impact of his passing. When he's no longer there, who's keeping the peace? Who's maintaining the achdus? Who's ensuring that Ishes Re'eo Yazero, everybody's going to be there for one another? And maybe, therefore, the achdus that was there before on account of him is no longer at that same level. And that generates a certain void. And as a result, like we mentioned regarding Haman, engenders a certain opportunity and a vulnerability, enabling the Canaanites, the Melech Canaan, now to feel that the moment is right for attack. In fact, who is the Melech Canaan?
Amalek.
Twice we find Amalek attacking Klal Yisrael. In the first instance, as soon as they are coming out of Mitzrayim, where after that event, the Torah tells us, Vayichan Shom Yisrael. After that whole event, they come to Har Sinai, Vayichan Shom Yisrael, there, Ki Ishecha B'Lev Echad. By Har Sinai, Ki Ishecha B'Lev Echad, Meklal Heinat Hashemei Allah, which means beforehand, again, knew each man only knowing in Mitzrayim, survival of the fittest, and each one was for themselves. There wasn't that same level of Achdus. That's what made them right for the picking then, for Amalek to come and attack. And here again, when they find themselves already in the absence of Aaron, so again, the Achdus wasn't necessarily at that same level, which once again makes them susceptible to the challenge of Amalek once more. Because who is Amalek? Asher Korcho Baderek Miloshen Karak. Amalek himself was the one who came along and to cause all kinds of cooling off. No warmkeit, no warmth, you know, forget about each other, be cold towards one another. That's what Amalek looks to engender, the disparity in the ranks. He takes advantage of when he sees a certain lack of Achdus, and he attacks in the process as well. Our whole existence as a Klal Yisrael is obviously L'mayla min HaTeva. It's a supernatural existence. Ketzayin, like in the words of Chazal, like a sheep among 70 wolves. The Gadol Haraya, great is the shepherd who's always looking after us and protecting us. But what happens if the sheep turns around to the shepherd and says, thank you very much, I'm okay, I don't need your protection, I can take it from here? It's not that we get punished in the process. It's that we shift from an existence that is l'mayla min HaTeva into a situation where the shepherd is no longer there. Gadol HaRoya is no longer there. And therefore now we are susceptible to Teva, to the laws of nature. And by the laws of nature, our existence is pretty much non-existent. It's not guaranteed at all. At this point, it's up to you to make it. And the wolves are not scared. And then you are at that much more risk. So if you offend the father, as it were, by telling him, I love you, but I don't like your kids, you're effectively telling them, I've got this. And he'll tell you, okay, you're on your own. And that's when we are at our most vulnerable. That's been our reality from time immemorial. When there's shalom in the ranks, when there's achdus, that's when there is strength and stability and fortitude. And that has to be our absolute focus, specifically during the Bein HaMitzarim and specifically now going into the 9 days. And of course, consider this as well. We well know, how did Aaron actually keep the peace? What was the secret? Chazal famously tell us, go to Reuben and say to Reuben, the Shimon didn't really mean it, he's really sorry, and he's embarrassed, but he really wants to make up, and then he repeat the same thing to Shimon as well. Problem is, he never spoke to either Reuben or Shimon. So the question is, doesn't that mean that Aaron was being a little bit untruthful? Or at best, maybe economical with the truth, as they say. And the answer is that Aaron may never have spoken to either Reuven or Shimon. But at the core, every member of Klal Yisrael wants to do what is right. At the core, every one of us, like any brother or sister, doesn't want to be really separated from the other. The schism, the feud, the disunity, that's all fueled by the Yetzer Hara. But Balkarcha Yana Amen, as put the Gemara in Shabbos, we can all relate to that. You do something not nice, or you say something not nice about somebody, and later you apologize. You say, I'm sorry, I honestly don't know what came over me. You know me, it's not like me at all. It just wasn't being myself. What does it mean, I wasn't being myself? It means what we all know to be true. Because what we know about ourselves is that there is a real self, and there is an unreal self. The unreal self may act cruelly, or foolishly, or both. The real self would never do anything to hurt somebody else, or anybody in any which way whatsoever. Hence, the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Gerushin, we coerce the essence out of him. There may be things that are masking over the core, but deep down, the real you wants to do the right thing. The real you is pained when there isn't aptus. The real you wants there to be shalom. And therefore, Aaron was merely exposing the truth that lies at the essence of every single neshama, of every single yid. In simple terms, you think, for whatever the reason, that you're upset with that person, or you don't like that person, but deep down, you are hurting about it. Deep down, you really do. And Aaron himself was merely coming along to actually expose that truth. In fact, on this very point, it's also curious to consider how at the end of Moshe's life, that's what the Torah again emphasizes, how by his passing, there was just the B'nai Yisrael who cried. And then Rashi emphasizes over there again, Moshe enke ba'aron kol beis Yisrael. And then Rashi makes the point of telling us that Aaron was the ultimate peacemaker, and that's why, like we said, it was kol beis Yisrael. Moshe enke by Moshe, begging the question. This is the end of Moshe's life. This is now, the Torah itself is being masked in Moshe, telling us all the great things that he achieved and accomplished, how he was honored mikol adam, etc., all the great things about him. And yet within that, we're looking to emphasize something over here that seems to be somewhat negative, highlighting a uniqueness of Aaron over Moshe. Why would we be looking to do that, dafka, at that point, when we're being masked all the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu himself? And the point is this. This in itself is actually true testament to Moshe's greatness. Moshe Dafka wants this to be included in that hespit, in that epitaph, as it were. You see, Aaron was Midas HaChesed. And on the level of Midas HaChesed, you can look beyond the surface, into the core, like we said, to see what's going on beneath, at the truth of what each individual has lying at the essence of their neshama, even if it's not readily apparent. Moshe was Midas Emes. Moshe Emes was Teras Emes. And on the level of Midas Emes, black is black and white is white. What you see is what you get. There isn't that room or that space to be able to look deeper and determine what lies deeper, etc. And Moshe himself wants that, and his passing in that very hesped, it should be emphasized to all of us in the Torah itself. I am Midas Emes. This is who I am. Black is black, white is white. You call it for what it is. What you see is what you get. But don't be like that. I want you all to be and learn the lesson of Kol Beis Yisrael. Be like Aaron. Aspire to that Midas HaChesed, where you can actually dig deeper and expose the reality of the Shalom that really is something that is an essential yearning of the Shana, of the Neshama, of every single one of us. Which again, emphasizes the bigger point and the message that is absolutely paramount at this point and this time of year. There's a very curious and famous story told in the Gemara about Rabbi Elazar, or some say Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Gemara in Tainus, who was once traveling along when he passed this rather homely-looking individual. And looking at him, he said, Reiko kamar mechor iso ish, empty one, how ugly is this person? And this apparent homely-looking individual turned back to him, to Rabbi Elazar, and said, Leich lo oman shasani. He told him, go back, Leich emar lo oman shasani, go back, and speak to the person, to the individual, to the one who formed him. In other words, you don't like the product, take it up with the manufacturer. And of course, Rabbi Eliezer felt an immediate sense of remorse, and he followed the man for miles and miles, begging his forgiveness. What is happening in this story? Is it really conceivable that somebody like Rabbi Eliezer could be so superficial as to judge somebody else based on their external appearance? Imagine a Rav coming into shul one day and telling somebody, I'm sorry, I don't like the way you look. I don't know, you need a nose job or something like that. I mean, if you could imagine Rav saying that, I don't want to know. Keep it to yourself. But consider this. Imagine if it's something more of a spiritual challenge. Imagine a Rav getting up and saying, how ugly is this person religiously? How devoid is this person of any spiritual substance? How crass is this person who is so disconnected from Yiddishkeit? Can we imagine somebody speaking like that? Or maybe not even expressed verbally, but by looking down, by nuance and innuendo. The Gemara makes a very deliberate point of telling us that Rabbi Elazar was coming with Beis Rabbi, Bisoma Simcha Gedolo. He was feeling really good about himself because he had just finished a Geshmakashir. And Rashi steps in over here very curiously and tells us that this person was really Eliyahu HaNavi. He was looking to set him straight that he shouldn't conduct himself like this. Curiously, Tosfos himself also comes along and makes the same point, the identical point, saying that this was really Eliyahu HaNavi. And it's quite an unusual thing where the Gemara is looking, the Gemara Melech, and Rashi coming to add an additional midrashic point, as it were, Yesh Svarim that says it's Eliyahu HaNavi. Tosfos is also adding that same point. Do you know that elated feeling that is generated after a Geshmak Hashir? You just finished Daf Yomi, it was a very good, it was fantastic, whatever it was. And you're... you were even maybe machadish something in the process, and you feel good. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with the feeling per se, but it becomes a problem when, in the words of the Gemara, in regard to Rabbi Elazar, when you become a little bit full of yourself as a result of whereby there's no room for another. And the key lies in the wording of Rabbi Elazar. What does he say? He says, Reka, empty one. He's not just reflecting on the man's external appearance. He's looking beneath the surface and he doesn't like what he saw. The man that stood before him was reka, he was empty, he was null of any ruchnius. Kama machur oiserish, how ugly is this man? Rabbi Elazar, on account of his newly acquired spiritual contentment engendered from his limud haTorah, was quick to condemn this lesser mortal. But the man retorts, go back to the craftsman. By definition, I was also created. Maybe I'm not of the same lofty status as you, but the same craftsman who formed you formed me as well. At the core, I am no different than you. This man, or more precisely, Eliyahu HaNavi, was looking to teach Rabbi Elazar an important lesson that is equally pertinent to all of us. It seems that he did have something, as the Gemara clearly implies, of a holier-than-thou attitude, a mindset, a weakness that is not too uncommon today. And Rabbi Elazar had an issue whereby he may have looked down upon those whom he may have recognized as not being up to parity with his own spiritual disposition. So this man, or Eliyahu, retorts with a fundamental Jewish principle, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Plain and simple. You don't know where he's been. You don't know the DNA makeup of his neshama. And even though at first glance, in the words of Sefer HaTanya, a person might appear to be loathsome and despicable, mi idea, how do you know his true greatness in his shirish and his roots up above, of where his nesham emanates from? Look beyond, again, the skin deep, to the core, to the surface, as Aaron HaKayin teaches us to do. Says Rav Tzadok HaKayin, in his Pri Tzadok and Parshas Kedoshim, quoting the Gemara in Brachos, ki be'emes nafshei Yisrael tzadikim, on the mitzvah of Avos Yisrael, he quotes the story, this story of the Gemara Rabbi Elazar, and he stresses that regardless of the enormity of the sin, as what we said before, everybody wants to do the right thing. It's only the Sar Shebe'iso, the Yetzer Hara, the untrue self, that might lead a person astray. But with tshuva misrapi hakol, with tshuva, with everybody understanding and recognizing the bigger reality, we can all find our way back. So we don't get to write anybody off. Thus says the Gemara in introducing us to that story, in the first instance, the takeaway message, which the Gemara begins with, is la'olam yehei adam rach, kekana ba'al yehei kasha kerozet. A person should be soft like a reed, and it shouldn't be hard like cedar. And in the words of Avos Rav Nosson, Ma kon hazeh, kol haruchos bois v'noish v'espoi. This reed, all the winds come along and it makes it sway back and forth. The reed turns and bends in the actual wind. But when the winds go silent, the reed goes back and stands in its original place. So we might sometimes question ourselves and say, I shouldn't get involved, I shouldn't involve myself, because what can happen to me? Be soft like a reed. Bend. It's not like you're compromising your principles. Get involved with the other person, whichever way. You're not going to be compromising your dignity. You can be oimid b'klema, you'll still revert back and stand in your place. Maintain your dignity, keep your standards, even as you are looking to bend to reach out to another. And therefore, I suggest to you, when Rashi and Tosfos are both coming along to dock and emphasize over here, to jump in to stress that this was really Eliyahu HaNavi, it's because it's precisely this mindset that keeps us stuck in gulos. Sinas chinam is what led us into where we are now, and therefore the antidote is clearly avas chinam. Avas chinam, gratuitous love, means obviously loving somebody else where there may be seemingly nothing to love about them, because they appear mechur, because they appear reka. But we learn to love them just the same, and that's when Eliyahu HaNavi himself will be able to come to be mabasa de gula. I was sitting with this choshev yid over here in front of me at a bar mitzvah a couple of weeks ago, and we ended up having a conversation. So we started to talk about the Gemara, about koshek and kriyas yamsuf. Why does the Gemara talk about the fact that it's as difficult for the Eibishter to bring two people together as it was for kriyas yamsuf? And of course, the Gemara says zivug rishon, zivug sheni, but in the bigger scheme of things, how does it really make sense? What's the comparison? Why dafka kriyas yamsuf? So one beautiful explanation is as follows. There is a medrash that tells us the Yashav Ha'am Le'esonai, which Chazal tell us in the medrash means Le'tznai. In other words, the waters reverted back to the Tznai, to the original condition. What was the condition? By Bria Sa'ilam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he brought Mayim, when he brought water into being, made a Tznai with the water. And he said that you're going to flow as you do, that will be your nature. But there will yet come a point in time, and he brought the neshamas of Klal Yisrael, who will be coming out of Mitzrayim, and said, these neshamas will be standing in front of you, and when they do, you'll have to go contrary to your nature and make sure to split before them. That was the tznai. And on that condition, I'm bringing you into being. Fast forward all those many years, and when Klal Yisrael stood in front of the waters, it didn't immediately split. What does that mean in practical terms? Well, in Halal, which we'll be saying tomorrow, Hayam Ra'a Bayanos. The waters saw and they ran away. Ma Ra'a Hayam Bayanos. What is it that the waters saw that made them run away, that made them split? Ra'a Ranesh Yosef. It saw the coffin of Yosef. So what does that mean? It saw the coffin of Yosef and it split. I mean, and why did it have to see the Aron of Yosef? It already made it snipe by Maaseh Bereishis to go ahead and split. What's really going on over here? Let's look back briefly at the story of Yosef and his brothers. Because in the Gemara, the Pasuk tells us, Yosef recognized his brothers and they didn't recognize him. And why didn't they recognize him? So Rashi says they were much older when they sold him in the first instance. So they had their long beards and whatever. So he immediately recognizes them. But they don't recognize him because he was so much younger then. He was only 17. Now he's that much older and he looks older with a beard, etc. So the Rebbe Rosh Hashanah Torah come and ask the question, really? I mean, we all have a certain familial resemblance. If you have a brother you haven't seen in however long, chances are when you do meet up with him, you are most likely going to recognize him. So how does it really make sense that they didn't recognize him simply because he aged and he had more of a beard now and whatnot? And he goes on and he explains as follows, that at the end of the day, the Shvatim, very much like the Avos, were right, so they were shepherds. Why were they shepherds? Because as far as they were concerned, when you're a shepherd, you're not involving yourself too much in Gashmias. And the world of Gashmi and the world of Ruchni are mutually exclusive. It's impossible to involve yourself in the material world too much and still maintain your spiritual anchor. When you're a Rei Yitzhak, that's one of the reasons I was offered about why Klal Yisrael wanted to remain in the Midbar. So then you just have to involve yourself minimally with the sheep, and the rest of the time you can do things Ruchni. So when they see a man before them over here, who's so utterly submerged in the Gashmis of Mitzrayim, he was running the economy. He was literally doing everything over there, so utterly engaged with the gashmis of this world. There's no way, this can't be our brother. There's no way that he could be so utterly involved in the gashmis and still in any way have any semblance of ruchnis. But wrong they were. There's a famous story where somebody came once to the Rebbe Rayatz, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was the first one to send out shluchim in different parts of the world. And he asked him, how could you do that? If you take a cup of hot water and you put it into the ocean, then the cup of hot water gets completely cooled off in a cold ocean. And he answered back and said to him, yes, that's when you put a cup of hot water into a big cold ocean. But if the hot water is coming out of the mains in the first instance, then regardless of how cold the ocean is, the water will always remain hot. And over the course of time, more and more of that space of ocean and more beyond that will start to warm up a little bit. If you remain anchored to source, then you're not compromising yourself. You're that connect, which should always be able to revert back and maintain their stature. That was Yosef. That's what they didn't recognize. That's what they couldn't understand. Like that man who asked that question. But Yosef ultimately remained absolutely anchored to source. These neshamites that came down, and they stood in front of the Yam Suf. The Yam Suf doesn't recognize them. Behem lo hikiru. The Yam Suf doesn't recognize them. These are not the same neshamites that I made that deal with all that time ago by Bria Sa'ilam. Those neshamites were holy, were pristine, were absolutely pure. Here now, they are already all contained in Gufim Gashmi, and they're all contained in material bodies. They had all now been spending 210 years in Mitzrayim. Eilu Evdei Avodah Zarah, Ve'eilu Evdei Avodah Zarah. Doesn't recognize these neshamites. They're not the same ones that I made the deal with. But then, Hayam Ra, Ma Ra, Arayna Shal Yosef. He looked at Yosef and he came to realize, just like with Yosef, don't look at things at face value. Don't judge things based on their surface. Look beneath the surface. Don't make the same mistake the Yom Suf was making, similar to the Shvatim, of not recognizing the reality that these are the same neshamas at the core. These are the same people, the same neshamas, the same tzidkos, the same holiness, the same pristine stature that they were before. Even when somebody is in a world far from their source, it's not a gold is green and it's not a bnei brak, as long as the reality is that they remain eminently connected to source and they can ultimately be transformed. And just derech agav, in that context, the same thing is with couples. The Eibishter already determines before Yetziras HaVlad, Avoyim Yoyim, that Bas Ploni L'Ploni. That's the neshamas. They come into the world. They don't immediately recognize each other. And the Eibishter has to step in. Like with Priya Siyam, the Eibishter has to step in and make sure that they recognize each other once more and know that these are the same two neshamas, without going into a lot of detail. The message over here is the same. Never give up on somebody else, regardless of the external appearance of another. Look beneath the surface to the pristine essence within. Again, that remains our ongoing responsibility, especially in these particular days. And just to finish on a final point in this regard, Pinchas, as we know, out of a profound love for Klal Yisrael, went against the odds, risked so much in the process, and the kind of nikmas Hashem, he avenged Hashem's honor. And as a result, Hinele Noisimoy is Bris Yisholot. And we know that the Vav is split. Says the Baal Turim, that Vav represents the Vav that we find in five instances added into the name of Yaakov, and in five instances lacking in the name Eliyahu. In other words, as per what Chazal tell us, in five instances Yaakov is spelled with an extra Vav in the middle, and in five instances Eliyahu is spelled without the Vav at the end, and that's because Yaakov is holding the Vav as a mashkan, until Eliyahu comes to be Mabaster about the Gula and the coming of Mashiach. Says the Baal HaTurim, that's the Vav that is split in Sholem right now by Pinchas. That's the gap that we have to bridge. And he says that's the meaning of the Pasuk, Yogel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Yismach, he points out, is Oisiyos Mashiach. When will it be Yaakov Yisrael? When will Yaakov be able to rejoice when he can give back the Vav? When Yismach Yisrael, when Klal Yisrael will zecha to the coming of Mashiach. And that split Vav and Sholem is split, and we have to again bridge that gap with Sholem, with Achdus. That's how Yaakov can give back the Vav. That's how Eliyahu can come and actually be Mavasa de Gula. And the Baal HaTurim adds one other point. Sholem is Begamatria Zehu Mashiach. We can make it happen. We can bring about the Yismach Yisrael, and thus, as a result, the Simchas Olam Al Roshem with the coming of Mashiach Zekenu. When Yehofech Yom Me'elu Me'evo LeYom Tov Meheru B'Karev Mamash Amen. I'm sorry. She carries a torch. This is useless.
Now that we've started the baseball, it's time. creating this is to make sure that we can have
Okay. life, any doubt you're going to have.
Where and what she is. It's very interesting with an upraised hand. Your hand is upright, even though it's the way of the back. Your hand is upright.
Yes. It's Amalek in the wilderness. He must raise his hand. Raise his hands, what does that do? No, when they raise his hands, people turn their eyes towards heaven. Vayichtav Moshe, yes, Moshe Hen, Emasi Hen, Moses wrote their goings forth according to their journey. So obvious, isn't it? All the terms we should have been
why the oh. He wrote it in the time.
But I think the question why the obviously. Everything in the Torah is written by Moses. Why did you mention that?
Why does it say John Tudor? He was a writer of the Torah. He wrote it right.
So think.
So?
Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to go to the hospital.
Egyptians were bound as a woman of work and their gods. He doesn't say what and on their gods, does he?
And on their gods, he's only put the punishment.
So he's
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to go down and do that.